Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every single day talking about HR. So let's get to our guest. This is going to be fun and interesting. Michael, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Nisha. Glad to be here.
So if you would introduce yourself to our lovely family of listeners, and then we'll jump into what's top of mind with you.
Sure. So Mike DiNubio, Director of Human Resources for the Boston Red Sox. I've been here for just shy of 2 years, coming up on season number 3. We open up on April 4th, which is my 2-year anniversary, and I'd like to take all the credit for helping bring the team from worst to first from 2012 to 2013. It's really all about the HR function.
You grab the rainbow or the unicorn whenever you can get it, right?
So absolutely.
I have no reason to doubt you right now. So I think we're good there. So what take us into your world, and what's top of mind with you these days?
Sure. So, having this is my first venture into the sports industry, other than being a fan and, obviously a local guy here south of Boston, grew up and Red Sox fan all my life, and, just had a great opportunity to come to the organization and, and be part of it from the HR side. It's definitely a little bit of a different animal than some of the other industries I've been in, between consumer products and retail. And it's baseball drives what we do here. It's obviously the core. Everything's about winning. One of the things that certainly is front of mind, here we have a relatively small number of employees. But that number of employees, between the front office, your marketing, your accounting, your legal, all the different functions that most people have at their regular kind of normal quote unquote organizations, then you every year for 6 months you ramp up and you hire another 500 or 600 people that are on your game day staff, and these are the people that are the front line to your fan, your biggest revenue generator, the person who buys your tickets, whether it be a season ticket holder or somebody who comes once a year or, a couple times a year. So we're always trying to keep our customer service message fresh. We've got guys that have been working here for 30, 40 years. We bring them through. We train them every year, bring them through how they should provide this engaging fan experience, and keeping that fresh for them as someone who say, these guys say, I've heard this every year for the last 30 years. I think that's one that is definitely a challenge for us, making sure that those guys know how important their role is and how we can really keep those messages fresh for them.
Well, and it's you're in the entertainment business, right? I mean, that's,
yes.
At the end of the day, that's what it is. And
yep.
So, what are some differences? Where did you come from before jumping into this, in the entertainment side of the world the HR?
Yeah, so I kind of cut my teeth in campus recruiting back in the day at Deloitte & Touche. I say I'm a recovering CPA. Worked there in the audit practice for 5 years, and found that I really enjoyed the clients I worked with and the team that I had, but just didn't want to bang a calculator for the rest of my life. So I had made it known early on that I was very intrigued by this whole campus recruiting model, which I think a lot of people in the and the HR and talent acquisition function, kind of cut their teeth in campus recruitment, and had done some work there in Boston, and then made a jump over to Staples. I guess that was easy, and we've got that kind of office products, and stayed in the retail space there for about 7 years, doing a variety of different roles and kind of going from the campus recruitment up to the more experienced hire recruitment and talent acquisition, and then had a quick layover elsewhere, and was at Hasbro you know, for 3.5 years before coming to the Red Sox. So another great place to, you know, I've been blessed to be, you know, surrounded by here the last couple of years, sports, coming to Fenway Park every day, and 3.5 years before that to be surrounded by some of the best brands in the world, that, you know, most recognizable toy and game brands. So it was definitely more of a role there that was, you know, manufacturing environment, but focused on, you know, a consumer that was very engaged in and enamored by, you know, the brand. And, you know, we had a lot of similarities between Hasbro and the Red Sox, in that you get a lot of people who are, you know, they want to come work for your company because they love the brands. And they can tell you, you know, at Hasbro you have people kind of toy geeks that can tell you everything you wanted to know about G1 Optimus Prime from 1980, you know, and more than you could ever want to know, but maybe couldn't market it or couldn't design it. And the same thing with here at the Red Sox. We've got a lot of people who want to work here because they grow up, you know, rooting for the team, and they can tell you every stat, every retired number, all the great moments they've had at Fenway Park, but they just might not be cut out for a specific role that we had. So it's definitely some similarities and parallels there, and always hard to navigate, especially because those brands like a Hasbro, like a Staples, like a Red Sox, no matter what happens as an HR professional, especially on the talent acquisition side, you want somebody to buy your product, to have a good experience, tell their friends. So it's all about having that great, engaging, you know, customer and candidate experience while you're here.
So where do you think you're, you know, coming from kind of the, you know, campus recruiting? It sounds like you've been touching talent acquisition, you know, pretty much your whole career.
Mm-hmm.
So how, you know, where are some words of wisdom you can give the generalist and or the HR manager who just seems to be drawn away from talent acquisition as maybe the cornerstone for having a good people organization is having good people?
I think we always, you know, we talk about, you know, that being our most important asset, and I think those words can be, you know, they should be embraced by everybody in terms of their organization. I think some people just say it for the sake of saying it, but I do think from an acquisition perspective, it really is. You know, it's spending the time. You know, there's I could go on and on about, you know, the number of times, you know, people are. I tell a candidate, if someone's asking you for your resume, you know, when you walk into the interview room, you know, it's going to be an uphill battle because they haven't learned anything about you before you've walked in there. You know, so I think for all of us, it's incumbent upon us to prepare when it comes to not only just meeting candidates, but from the very beginning, why do we need this job? How is this job different than the person that it's replacing? Or if it's a new job, what is this person going to do? Why do we need it? How is it driving revenue? How is it going to impact, you know, our business? And then from that kind of scoping out that job, then, you know, when you get to the selection, you know, your posting process, or however you're going to go, your sourcing process, are you looking in the right places? Are you just doing the traditional job boards? You know, how are you going out and finding people in a way that's helping you find the best talent? You know, not looking for those active job seekers all the time, but really finding those passive good good people that are at other organizations that may do what you need. You know, in another place, and you can attract them into your organization, and that's all comes, and everybody plays a role in that. Everyone thinks, oh, that's just HR's job, that's just the talent acquisition team's job. Everybody's got to play a role in that, and you know, whether that's, you know, leveraging hiring managers to really use their LinkedIn and helping them understand how to use it and how they can help you market their jobs through LinkedIn, because they're probably connected to the types of people they want to find. We've been using some HR technology, you know, which is not new. But it's, you know, and it's I think it's becoming more widespread, and, you know, we're using video interviewing to really help us with our selection process, help us really meet people before they walk through the doors of Fenway Park, and help understand a little bit more about them and if they're the right people. But I really do think it's an investment of time that everybody needs to make, and not really just rely on the HR people. So you got to get your teams involved and make them understand how important it is for them to get involved.
Wonderful. Michael, I want to go back to one of your previous points as you have talked about customer service. I know the revenue generator, that profile of contingent workers, and the training that you provide for them in order to provide a better service. So what are some customer care or customer service lessons that our recruiters can learn in order to provide a better candidate experience?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think for, again, been fortunate to work at recognizable branded companies, and so I've found that leveraging the brand assets and the IP of the brands and the imagery of the brands go a long way, and some of that's just from a marketing perspective, but really developing that employment brand. You know, at Hasbro, we spent a lot of time, you know, my last year and a half there, really trying to, you know, again, leverage, you know, think about Transformers and G.I. Joe and My Little Pony and all these marketing departments that really had a great brand for those specific products, and we wanted to really, you know, figure out how we could leverage those assets from a recruitment brand and employment brand. So I think if you have that capability, and you have that ability, depending on kind of the cachet of your brand, certainly use, again, that imagery, those assets, some of the brand messages, and tie it into what you're trying to do. But customer service-wise, you know, it's follow-up. I mean, everyone gets buried with, you know, the applicant tracking system. And it's really, again, what I was talking about earlier. How are you going out and attracting talent? If you're just putting the jobs out there on some of these job boards, you know, again, use the imagery, use the messages that you're from your brand that equate to what you're trying to really look for. But you got to get back to people. Again, you know, you have to respond to them, even if they're not the right candidate, the right fit. It's making sure that you do that in a timely fashion. Some people have the ability to, at the organizations, depending on their size and their scope, to have a sourcing team that can help bring the right talent to the forefront, but also, you know, an operations team, a recruitment operations team that can really go in and, you know, keep up with what's coming through, you know, kind of the pull, so to speak, of the applicant flow, and really just managing that and getting back to people. I think it's also from involving the managers. I think candidates really enjoy being able to have access to hiring managers. I mentioned that we're using, you know, HireVue, and what we're starting to do with it is have our candidates, our hiring managers get involved asking questions to the candidates through this video interviewing. So they're pre-recorded and pre-taped, but, you know, they get to see that hiring manager maybe in their office setting or somewhere in the building. And even though they're asking me a question that's coming over a pre-recorded video, the candidate still feels a little bit more engaged, a little bit more involved in the process, and they get a chance to see who they're going to potentially be working for. So I think those are some of the things that we're doing, and that anyone really can do some of those things very simply to make sure that candidates feel welcome and that they're getting the service that they deserve as somebody who's interested in your company.
It's always fascinating to hear some of the aha moments of using video interviewing, and I'm very glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, one more, the other end of it, like, right now we talked about candidate experience, and then what happens when a candidate becomes an employee? Would that candidate experience should be continued in the organization? I mean, within the organization, what would you advise to our HR audience in order to continue that candidate experience and provide a better employment experience?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think it's something that, you know, we continue here to not to struggle with, but to improve upon, primarily because of the volume of new hires. We don't have a lot of new hires on a regular basis. You know, seasonally, you know, for our game day staff, certainly we do, and we've made some improvements into how we kind of bring them, you know, kind of onboard them into our culture. But I think it's making sure that the messages stay consistent. So, you know, if the handoff is from the talent acquisition to the talent management or the learning and development people, whoever's running orientation, it's, again, you know, we created a program here a year ago, and it sounds a little bit corny, I guess, but we kind of, you know, we call it opening day, you know, and the whole point of the orientation program is to make it so that the employee, when they first join the organization, feels excited about coming to work for the Red Sox on the first day as they would for coming to watch, you know, the Red Sox play baseball on opening day. And again, we got the agenda becomes the starting lineup, and you've got, you know, you got the seventh inning stretch for lunch, and you've got, you know, a bunch of, we went over the music of Fenway and a bunch of different thing. So we spent a whole day just talking about, you know, the things that they need to know about the organization. You know, we put together an acronym list for everybody because there's such a different language that's spoken here, not just in sports, but for the Red Sox in general. that we want people to really understand the vernacular and the language. So when they're in a room with an executive or with one of their peers, they understand what everybody's talking about. So it's continuing to develop those types of things for your employees that really will help them become productive on day one and understand the culture of the organization. Now, like I said, we started this program. We probably run it quarterly just based on the number of hires we have, but other organizations that I've been at, you know, do this on every Monday, and they have a great opportunity to start instilling that brand within their new hires, you know, from day one.
Great. Well, we have a question from our Twitter stream. Destin Haverkamp, he is asking, what strategies are the best when trying to engage temporary labor in customer service roles?
Trying to engage temporary labor in customer service roles. So I think it's making the tendency sometimes when it comes to temp labor is to, you know, in some cases, you know, to be viewed as, you know, pardon the expression, but, you know, a second-class citizen. You know, these people, you know, when I think about our game day staff, they are a temporary labor force. They're here. Almost all of them have other jobs. They're teachers. They're firefighters. They're retired from whatever their other job is, or they might have, you know, they're coming here from somewhere else in most cases. Yet these guys are the lifeblood of the organization. So I think it's providing access and opportunities as much as you can for them to make sure that they feel like they are a valued member of the organization. So, you know, I can remember back at a prior company, you know, kind of the churn and burn of hiring, you know, help desk people and, you know, help desk employees and technicians. And people just went in and out of that role for another quarter or somewhere else at a 50 cents for, you know, down the street for at another help desk. I think we could have done a better job there, certainly, of, you know, bringing that talent pool and those temporary laborers into more of the culture. They were kind of cordoned off in another building 2 miles away from the main corporate headquarters. Anytime there was a company outing or meeting, they weren't invited. And certainly, you know, not everybody could make it based on the shifts they had. But, you know, I think that's something that you really need to include them in as many things as you possibly can. For us here, you know, end of season batting practice for our game day employees. You know, picnic. We used to have a front office picnic, but it wasn't really involving our game day staff. Last year, we got people to come in, bring a friend, bring a family member. You know, invite them to get pictures with the World Series trophies. And now again, all these things are awesome opportunities that, you know, anyone who loves sports would love to have. But for some reason, we weren't necessarily including all of our population in that. And it was, in hindsight, it was the wrong strategy. So I think finding ways to include them in your mainstream kind of permanent workforce and the things that they do will be helpful, Dustin.
Great answer. Thanks for sharing that. So what does innovation in HR look like for you?
Are you asking me outside of the Red Sox, Brian, or just in general, kind of what does that look like? Is that what you're...
Kind of overarching. Obviously, anything you can share within the Red Sox kind of organization would be great, but overarching.
Yeah. Innovation. So, you know, I think that's a good question. You know, I think it's doing things, you know, and again, I'm going to make a big blanket 50,000-foot statement, but doing things that, you know, kind of upset the apple cart a little bit, you know. And I think it's from an HR perspective, you know, it's, you know, one of the things I always enjoyed doing was at, whether it be at ERE or some of the other, you know, recruiting conferences, some people go to SHRM, whatever it is, for HR, getting on that vendor floor and really seeing kind of what's new and figuring out how you can apply, you know, different technologies to your business. You know, at one point for me, I mentioned, you know, the hire view. And another point in time when I was at Hasbro, we did some stuff with SuccessFactors and Jobs to Web, and, you know, really trying to think about, you know, how we can automate, you know, not necessarily automate systems for the sake of automating, but learning from the data and learning from the information that we get out of it. So with the Jobs to Web platform, it was really trying to understand, where are people coming from? How are we spending our money? How are we, you know, where are our candidates coming from? And how can we best determine that so we can best focus our efforts on those types of platforms or sites or sources? So I thought, you know, again, is it innovative to go to the vendor floor at some of these conferences? No, that's not innovative. But going and really understanding, you know, and taking the time to talk to some of the different technology opportunities that may be beneficial to you or your company now or in the future, and having that understanding, I think, are things that I've found beneficial to myself in the past. But when I do talk about tipping the apple cart, it's, you know, being able to have a position on a particular topic, whether it be, again, whether it be sourcing, whether it be talent management, you know, again, the talent acquisition side, compensation, benefits, whatever it might be, having a different perspective and one that you can share and articulate with your senior managers and show how it benefits the organization, whether it's increasing profits, decreasing expenses, all the things that our CEO and CFO care about, but how we can also make our people better.
So, you know, and I love the part of your answer, because what I hear is, I mean, you ultimately, to really push innovation, you've got to learn the business. I think to be the best, create the best HR organization, you have to learn the business. That's what I've always all the people around the world that I really hold in the highest regard as far as my tier one of kind of HR professionals, are every one of them, they know the business. They could step into operations, they could step into marketing, not that they know it, but they have such a good overarching experience around all the points of operation, because you've got to recruit for all points of the operation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that to me, real quick, is probably the biggest opportunity and the biggest fail. Same side, different side, same issue, is that not learning the business is really keeping it very transactional.
Right. No, agreed. And I think a lot of people, when they onboard into an organization, they kind of do their one-on-ones. They spend their time with some of the business leaders, so they get to know for that 45 minutes or an hour, hey, who you are, what you do, how long have you been here, and, you know, how can I help? And then filing those notes away and not taking on that same tack. And I find myself, you know, guilty of it as much as anybody. You know, it's easy to sit in the office, bang through emails, get work done, you know, quote unquote get work done, but, you know, you got to get up out of your seat, walk around, have the conversation, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, let people know, you know, be visible, you know. And I think that's an important part of all of our jobs in the HR side, is that, to be visible and let people know that we care about, you know, their function, their business, and the people that are running those functions and those businesses.
Well, that's so. Thank you for sharing that. I love the innovation question. That just takes you. It's amazing in what directions that it ends up going. So next one, and this one's really, because you've been to some really very visible brands, recognizable brands. And very different. So when people start talking about culture, where does your head go? Do you kind of twinge a little bit? Some do, because it's it's used in such an odd way at times. But give us your thoughts on culture.
Yeah, I would say I twinge. I mean, I think it's definitely, you know, when we talk about when the word culture comes up, you know, people tend to. It's a buzzword. It can be a buzzword if you let it be. I think culture is very important. I think, you know, but I'm a firm believer, and I've said this from, you know, the last 15 years especially to newer hires and you know, college students and stuff like that, is that, you know, I can sit here and tell you all about the culture of my organization. I can tell you all about how I personally feel the culture is, you know, from my perspective, and then, you know, someone from the next company can tell you all about their culture. It's one of those things that I feel like you can talk about, but until somebody really gets in the organization, you know, they don't have a true, like anything else, they don't have a really true feel for it. You know, because the words don't always describe kind of some of the nuances of it and some of the different politics of it. And I think, you know, all those things influence the culture. But I do think, as HR professionals, you know, we all have an opportunity to help influence that and shape that. You know, there are some things that, you know, whether it be through different programs, through different activities, through team building, you know, through how we help influence our senior leaders to communicate better or differently, more often, sometimes less often, depending on what's happening. But I think that we all have an opportunity to really help shape that. And most of it is shaped by hopefully listening to what our employees are saying they want or need. And again, we're not here to give them everything they want, but it's our opportunity to try and provide to them what they need and really understand the pulse of the organization. So I think it is very important. I think some people will thrive in different types of cultures or different types of environments more so than others, which is probably, again, not profound. But there are people that have come to the many companies that I've been at and have not, you know, some people haven't succeeded, but they've gone on to have great careers and do things at other places that are more aligned with kind of either their work style or the type of, personality that they might have that fits better with them.
Well, I totally agree with you on the point that, as you said, until somebody really gets into the organization, we don't get to know, right? And every team has its own culture or its own team dynamics. That would be entirely mm-hmm. different than the overall culture of the organization that we normally see on videos or the visual content on all over social media or even on a career site. But still, from a recruitment perspective, you know, we generally stress or you focus on that cultural fit factor more than the competency, I would guess so. So in order to understand, I mean, for the recruiter, in order to understand whether that candidate is going to be a cultural fit or not, what do you recommend for the recruiters in order to identify that?
Yeah, I think, part of it is making sure that they get, you know, that candidate, when they come through the process, gets, you know, has an opportunity to spend time with a variety of different people. So not just the hiring manager and the hiring manager's team. Because, as you just pointed out, Nisha, they might have their own subset of a culture, right, within the entire organizational culture. So who are the peers of that hiring manager? Who are the peers of the people on that recruitment team? Who are the other people and the business partners that candidate may be exposed to or may be working with on projects or whatever it might be throughout the process? So I think one is getting that candidate exposure to them. So then you get different data points from people around the organization. So, you know, you can get an understanding of, you know, and all of us as recruiters know, for the most part, which hiring managers, you know, their disposition, their kind of pain points, the things that really irritate them or the things that they really get excited about. So, you know, we can kind of vet those comments through the hiring managers and through the different people on the interview team to really understand if this person will be a good culture fit. You know, another way to, again, use a product. You know, we use Predictive Index here. It's not an end all be all, but it also, you know, it's a 5 minutes for your candidate to really understand a little bit more about, you know, about them, what drives them, what kind of motivates them. So that's something that we use. But I think that one of the more important parts of Predictive Index is making sure that you sit with, again, when you send out the very beginning, it's called a pro, you send that out to the hiring manager to fill out so you get a sense of what they're really looking for. But then you send it out again to the other business partners and other people that might be working on it. And as you kind of get the answers back, you know, all electronically, and you get this data back, you start to look at, okay, you know, the hiring manager thinks we need this type of a person with this, you know, that's very assertive, has a strong sense of urgency, and is very detail oriented. But wow, looks like the business partner this person is going to be really working with sees it a little bit differently. And so then you get an opportunity before you even start interviewing candidates and bringing them in to really help define the scope of what that job is and what we really need, kind of what I was talking to at the very beginning of this call. What do we really need out of this person? So I think those are a few different things that will help you kind of identify the right cultural fit for your jobs.
Well, that's really interesting, Michael. Well, we have about 1 minute left at this point. So where can people connect with you and come and find you?
Say that again.
Where can our audience can connect with you and say hi to you or probably come and find you and give you a handshake?
Sure. On Twitter at mdanubio4, that's mdanubio4. Obviously out there on LinkedIn. If anybody's ever out on Fenway Park in the Boston area, and they're going to be coming by to see their favorite team, or hopefully their favorite team is the Red Sox. You know, happy to say hello. But I live kind of in the Boston area, and here kind of again physical location. But I tend to hang out in those other spots from a virtual and social space.
Wonderful. Well, Michael, thank you so much for being here with us today and sharing your wisdom on sports HR, and it really indeed a fantastic conversation. So talk to you all tomorrow. Bye.